So today, I want to give a little bit of an introduction to what we'll be starting now, which are the general themes of tzedakah, which is, of course, a core value, the core value, perhaps, arguably, of what it means to be a Jew, and I emphasize that it's the core value, possibly, for a number of reasons that we will expand upon. But just to give a little bit of an introduction, so tzedakah is really a subset of the larger value of chesed. It has its own identity within chesed. And chesed is clearly a core value of what it means to be a Jew. And chesed is one of our foundational mitzvos. And it's the idea that in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, the Torah identifies as what caused, perhaps, Avram's selection as the ancestor of the Jewish people. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu visits Avram. Avram engages in chesed. We'll talk about this in a little bit more detail. And Avram is also let in on the plan to destroy Sodom. And immediately after that, God declares about Avram that it was a given that he would be informed about this. And Machasani Avram, Ki Yedativ, I knew about him. Es Asher Yitzav Es Benalav Es Beis of Acharav, that he would instruct his family and his household that they should follow in my ways. And my ways is identified there as the way of Stako Mishpat. And the notion in general of God's path is identified by the Gemara in a few places as the path of chesed. So we're told that we have a mitzvah of halachta b'drachav, that, as the Chafetz Chaim notes in his Sefer on chesed, avos chesed, appears at least 8 times in the Torah. All happens to be in Sefer Dvarim. In Latin, it's known as imitatio dei. But the mitzvah of halachta b'drachav could mean more than this. Rav Shechter has a whole kuntras in his Sefer Nefesh HaRav, where it talks about additional, some very fascinating applications of halachta b'drachav. But what's certainly there, as far as the Gemara, is the notion of chesed, that the Kadosh Baruch Hu practices chesed, and therefore that is our role as well. That's what it means to imitate God. The Gemara, in a few places, has slightly different formulations of this, which is also interesting. In some places, it highlights the midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mahu rachum v'chanan, afata rachum v'chanan, that just as God is kind and compassionate, so too that is our job. Other ways, in other contexts, it highlights certain actions. So the Gemara in Sota, for example, tells us that the Torah is t'chiloso v'sofo b'chesed. The Torah starts off and ends in chesed, which is both literal and figurative, meaning that the actual beginning of the Torah and end is framed in chesed, but also that's a way of saying, to say figuratively, this is the beginning and the end of it, this is the start and the finish, it's all about chesed. But in terms of the literal sense, so what the Gemara highlights is that it ends with chesed because the last thing we read about in the Chumash is that Mahu Kovar Mesim, that God buries the dead, he takes care of the Kvura of Moshe Rabbeinu. And at the very beginning of the Torah, so the Gemara highlights Mahu Malbish Arumim, that he provides clothing for the unclothed, for Adam and Chava, who are suddenly aware of their need for clothes in Parshas Bereishis. Now it's interesting, it starts from there. There are some who point out that, you could point to even earlier examples, that is Hachnasas Orchim, that goes before that, and the fact that Adam and Chava are really given a place to live before they're given clothing in Gan Eden, maybe that could have been highlighted as God's chesed. And in fact, as Rav Soloveitchik talked about in his Rashos, the whole creation of the world was a hosting of humanity. So the chesed really goes earlier than that. So why does the Gemara say that the tchila of the Torah that represents chesed is the Malbish Arumim? Okay, it's a different question. But one way or another, the point is being made that chesed is the frame structure of the Torah, and that is why Avraham Avinu is selected because he discovers this path of chesed, and that it's clear that he's going to pass this on to his descendants. Shmuel, you had a question about that?
No, it was just giving you...
Okay. So, and the Gemara Yevamah is going to be Daf Yomi coming up. The Gemara says that if you want to know who is a descendant of Avraham Avinu, so we look for three midos, two of which are seemingly very similar and related to this area. Rachmanim v'gom l'chasadim, people who are compassionate and people who are engaged in chesed. We'll have more to say about that later in the week. Yeah.
If I remember correctly, doesn't the Rambam further elaborate that if somebody is not like that, you should check if they're really Jewish or not?
Right, which is essentially the message of the Gemara. That's where the context of the Gemara is saying that this is how we know the ancestry, because we assume that it's embedded in their neshama. So chesed is this core mission, and the Gemara in Sukkah talks about Staka as kind of a parallel track to chesed in general. And there, the Gemara says, the Gemara actually emphasizes all the other chesedim as being greater, so Staka, as important as it is somewhat inferior to the rest of chesed, as we'll discuss a little bit, because the Gemara there talks about the phrase he uses for tzedakah there is chesed shebemamono. So the Gemara contrasts chesed shebegufo and chesed shebemamono. It's chesed that we do through our own physicality and things that we choose to do with our time and ourselves, and the chesed that we do with our monetary resources. So the Gemara contrasts the two and says that actually the chesed shebegufo is superior for a number of reasons, that we're able to help even people who are not poor, we're able to help even people who are no longer alive, which is an interesting discussion, and that it doesn't just limit itself to our resources, it uses our whole soul. Now, just as a little bit of a preview, so that's something which is going to have particular relevance to our Gemara specifically. Our Gemara is coming up here in Ksubis, Ches to Yud Aleph. So Bava Basra is one of the primary sugyas of Staka. Ksubis is another one. But here, in the context specifically of how the conversation gets started, so there's going to be a lot of focus not just on the individual who himself gives of his own money, but on the role of the Gabbai Staka. So we'll have a lot to say about that. And the Gabbai Staka has an interesting place in Halacha. And you'll see a suggestion in our Gemara is that the Gabbai Staka is even superior. That Gadol Hama'asa Yosim and Ha'osa, that for some reason the one who facilitates or encourages the giving of Staka is even superior to the one who is actually the one giving it. Which sounds like a really good deal if you think about it, but okay, so that's a notion that comes out from our Gemara. So there's going to be a lot of attention to the Gabbai Staka and the esteemed status of the Gabbai Staka, but also the responsibilities and the particular halachos that govern the Gabbai Staka. So we'll see, there's a lot to say about that. But the Gabbai Staka is in a unique position, because when the Gemara that we mentioned, Ksuba in Sukkah, that contrasts the Chesed Shebegufo, Chesed Shebemamono, so the Gabbai Staka is kind of a hybrid, because he is involved in Staka, and as the facilitator and the encourager and the enabler of Staka, so he is credited with the Staka. So whatever Mila there is to Staka, he is getting to. But he also is doing chesed shebegufo. So the extra qualities that are there for giving of yourself personally, not just of your money, that the Gemara says is special about general chesed, so that should apply to the Gabbai Staka as well. Now, Gabbai Staka, we'll have to discuss, is a little bit of a maybe overly specific term. So we're using it right now to refer to anybody who is involved in facilitating the both collecting and administering of tzedaka. It could be that there's a lot more specifics we'll have to see about that. And it had to do with a historic role, specifically within the traditional Jewish community, whether or not the contemporary professionals who are involved with charitable organizations, whether they have a status like a Gabbai Tzedakah or not, is a little bit complicated. There could be some differences. There could be distinctions between somebody who is paid and somebody who is not paid, distinctions between those who work on behalf of a community, those who work on behalf of a organization that has a certain cause. We'll see all that, but right now we're just using the term generally. Hi.
Would this also have significant ramifications for, let's say, a rabbi's discretionary fund, which I know many shuls have?
Absolutely. It has huge, huge applications for the discretionary fund, and Baz Hashem, that will also very much be on our radar to get into. So right now, we're using the term Gabbai Tzedakah broadly to refer to anybody who is, in addition to the actual owner of a wallet, the person who is encouraging it, administering it, making decisions about it, collecting it. There's a lot of other roles that are involved in getting the money from one person's pocket to somebody else's needs. But we'll talk about all of that. For now, we're using the term Gabbai Tzedakah to collectively refer to all of them. And our Gemaras specifically have a lot to say about the people in these roles. And that's going to be a big topic that we're going to look at. So this is a special opportunity to be a Gabbai Tzedakah because it's a hybrid of Chesed Shebegufo and Chesed Shemamono. You're involved in Chesed Shemamono. You're bringing about Tzedakah. And your particular role in it is Chesed Shebegufo. Parenthetically, just like as kind of an additional idea, so another action that is a hybrid of Chesed Shebegufo and Chesed Shemamono, it's not our topic now, but speaking of Avraham Avinu, so Hachnasas Orchim is that, because it's both a tzedakah-oriented kind of thing, because it's often about providing food to those who don't otherwise have food, but it also has a very time-consuming, labor-intensive element of service that is a part of it. So it's also a chesed shebegufo. So that's also a very praiseworthy and productive hybrid. So two hybrids between chesed shebegufo and shebemono are chesed orchim, as Avraham Avinu modeled. And Avraham Avinu modeled chesed, presumably of all forms. It's really the Torah's emphasis, which is noteworthy, which we'll also say a little bit more about. But presumably Avraham had a whole lifetime of chesed. But there's one episode specifically which the Torah highlights in great detail. And there's a lot to comment about that fact in of itself. But it happens to be a episode of Hachnasas Orchim. So Hachnasas Orchim is also a hybrid, just like the Gabbai Tzedakah, who makes prominent appearances in our sugyas over here. So before going into the specifics of tzedakah, so let's talk a little bit about chesed as a whole, and then we'll see a little bit more about the sources specific to tzedakah. Because, yes, tzedakah is an application and a subset of the value of chesed, but tzedakah has its own sources. So if you did look at the psukim that I sent out this morning, that we certainly have to pay some close attention to. So there's a lot to see from just looking at the psukim. So tzedakah is its own parsha in the Torah. So in addition to it being included values-wise in the concepts of chesed, which have their own sources, but tzedakah has its own separate parsha, its own separate psukim that command it, and its own separate mitzvos. So we have to address it from both angles. But first, talking about chesed as a whole. So how do you know, in addition to all of these strong statements, that are narrative, essentially, about Avraham Avinu, so how do we know that there is a mitzvah of chesed as a commandment? So there are actually what seems like two sources, even sets of sources. So we already mentioned V'halachta B'drachav, and that V'halachta B'drachav appears more than once. It appears at least 8 formulations in Sefer Dvarim, and that V'halachta B'drachav mandates us to act with chesed. And we have another mitzvah as well that mandates us to act with chesed. What's that? Very well-known idea. V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. It's a pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, one of the most well-known psukim in the Torah, even if not everyone knows that it is from the Torah. I remember my father telling me he was at some event where somebody got up and said, such a beautiful idea the Christians have, love your neighbor as yourself. I wish we had something like that in our Torah. So, yes, and not everyone knows where it came from originally, but yes, we certainly do. And that notion of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha also mandates chesed. Now, parenthetically, or maybe not so parenthetically, we talked about this a little bit when talking about the Yisur Nezikin, that it's not so clear how to understand the directive that comes from v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. Rabbi Akiva is quoted often as saying, zeh klal gadol b'Torah, and it's important to understand what that phrase means, because as the Sefer HaChinuch explains, that he's not saying this is a great mitzvah. The Kiva statement is not just saying, wow, yeah, that's a good one. Out of all the mitzvahs, I like that one. He's saying it's a klal gadol, meaning that, yes, it's a mitzvah, but it also is a klal, meaning that it's a principle which can be used to figure out a lot of other things. So there are other rules and other applications that come from the yesod that is derived from v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. So it's more like a meta mitzvah. It's a mitzvah in itself, but it also has principles that teach us things. And there is a big debate whether we should see it as positive or negative. So what does that mean? It sounds like it's the most positive idea around. What could be not positive about v'ahavta l'recha kamocha? So the question is that if we assume that it mandates positive behavior, so then the word kamocha is very challenging, because it's got to mean something. So if kamocha means that you should do positive things for others to an equivalent degree as you do for yourself, it's completely impossible. Now, you can't do for even one other person to the same extent as you do for yourself. So how could you do for everyone? That's fundamentally impossible. So some of the Rishonim, the Ramban, and others struggle with this and favor more of a negative interpretation that is articulated by Hillel in the Gemara Maseches Shabbos. It's also very well known, Hillel's conversation with a prospective ger who came and said, teach me the whole Torah on one foot. And Hillel said, you could boil it down to this one sentence, which is essentially a negative formulation of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, saying instead of do to others what you want done for you, it says in the negative, ta'alach sani l'chevrcha l'osabit, that which is hateful to you, don't do to others. So there's a lot to discuss philosophically about the comparative advantages of the two formulations in secular philosophy. So v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, whether or not you know it comes from the Torah, is referred to as the golden rule. And sometimes it's referred to the second rule, alach sani, that formulation is referred to as the silver rule. So there are various benefits for each one if you're coming at it just from a philosophical perspective. But the advantage of the silver rule is that that's theoretically possible. Theoretically possible, say theoretically because you could find yourself in challenges that are extraordinary, but theoretically somebody could live his entire life not doing to other people what he wouldn't want done to himself. Might be circumstances which really challenge it, but theoretically it's possible. While the positive version, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, it's hard to imagine how you could ever do that. Hi.
I don't understand what the... why it would be impossible, the positive version. I understand it'd be very hard, but I understand why, like, qualitatively.
Because if we say that, let's say, you're going to work to support your family, so should you also work to support everyone else's family? You couldn't even do that for one other person. You just don't have that much time. You don't have those resources. Now, there are other ways to interpret it. There are ways to answer that question. And you could say that Tzviahavta kamocha, that you wish you could, which I think is a helpful formulation, because then you could phrase it essentially that it covers the negative also. But let's say if we understand it to mean that I want for you what I want for myself to the same degree. Right? I understand that I can't actually provide it because I don't have infinite resources. But the wanting is there. So what does that mean? It means two things. It includes the negative formulation because it means that I'm presumably not going to try to stop you from getting it. I can't necessarily be the one to provide it, but I'm not going to try to hurt you from getting it, so maybe it covers that. And also, it is helpful for, and it's very helpful, it's a very useful formulation, for a general kind of chesed idea, because it means that, yes, I can't provide everything. I can't provide to the same degree as I actually do for myself, because that's physically impossible. But I wish I could. And so what does it mean? What's the practical relevance of the fact that I wish I could? It means that to whatever extent I can, I will. Right? So I can't provide for you as much as I provide for my own children, but if I'm able to, you're here and I have something and I can help you out, I will. So in a sense, it is helpful formulation to explain the general netiya towards chesed when it's reasonable and possible, saying that if I either try to stop you from getting what you want, or I don't do what I can do, if I don't do what is reasonable, so then it means I don't love you as much as I love myself. So there are ways to explain it. There's a lot more to say about it. It's not really our subject, just mentioning it to the extent that it's a helpful introduction. But this is all helpful for the position of the Rambam, at least, and other Rishonim, but certainly the Rambam, who in Hilchos Evel, in Perek Yedalet, in Mishneh Torah, the Rambam says that all of the chasadim that we do for each other are mandated because of V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. So this mitzvah, V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, tells us that we have to engage in chesed. So, question about that?
Why do we know V'ahavta has to do with what you do for a person?
Because that's how the Rambam formulates it. How does he know it? Or are you saying how does it? So presumably, it's consistent with what we just said, that if you love somebody and you mean it, so then if you're in a position to help them, presumably you will. Otherwise, if you
don't. That's a simple explanation, though, that's unrealistic.
Well, so it's unrealistic to actually do it as much as you do it for yourself. But if you wished you could, right, so then that which you can reasonably do, you'll do. So you won't undermine that by either causing harm, the negative formulations. So we've discussed over the past few months how many suggest, the Rishonim actually are coming up on our Davim, or coming up in the second parak, Rishonim Bava Basra, who say that V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha is the mucker for the Isser Nezikin, because to hurt somebody, that certainly contradicts V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. But in the positive sense also, there's room for that. You can say that if you really at least want for others, so then you won't contradict that by doing things like either hurting them or turning down reasonable opportunities. Now, clearly reasonable is subjective, and there's a lot to talk about that, and certainly in Hilchos Tzedakah as well, as we'll see. But subjectivity acknowledged, when you're in a position to help and you just wantonly choose not to help, so then that's going to be inconsistent with V'ahavta. Now, there's a couple of major questions that emerge here. So one question that emerges, this is just a textual question in the Rambam, which you wouldn't know unless you read the Rambam, is that the Rambam goes on to say, I'll give you the Rambam to look at inside tomorrow, that the Rambam says in this discussion that you should do chesed because of V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. So the Rambam says that the specific formulations of chasadim that we talk about, right, we all learn about categories as kids. So I ask you, what are some examples of chesed? You'll say, Achnas Asorchim, and Bikur Cholim, and Nichum Aveilim, and Simchas Chasim Kala. These different things that we know about that are included in the broader category of chesed. So the Rambam says that these were instituted by Chachamim. Sounds like these are dinim derabbanan. So that is a lot of literature about, because if they are already included in Yahav Telerecher Kamocha, so why do Chazal need to make new categories? So they're all already there. So there's a lot of suggestions why that is. Among the suggestions are that we needed help conceptualizing them. Or, for example, part of the whole literature I mentioned before, that philosophically, the golden rule and the silver rule both have their challenges. So one of the problems, perhaps, with the golden rule is maybe I don't have such a conventional sense of what I want and what I don't want. And so I'm going to miss some major chesed opportunities, because if I was sick, I wouldn't want anyone to come see me. I'm not interested in anybody's company. So when my friend is sick, it'll never occur to me to visit him, because it's not something that I want. So if I'm just using the rubric of Yahav Telecha Kamocha, Bikur Cholim would never occur to me, for example. So Chazal had to still ordain certain categories in order to help us understand that, yes, this is all a part of the broad idea of Yahav Telecha Kamocha, but still we may need to be instructed as to what that may actually entail practically. Now here, really the Mistafina, if I could say, is a little different than what some of the Rishonim say, but it does seem to me to be pretty straightforward for the most part, that some interpret the Rambam, and you do find this a little bit in some Rishonim even, to be saying that when you're doing, let's say, Nicham Avelim, those who are learning Daf Yomi, so finished Mor Katan, which ends with Sugis of Nicham Avelim, that also, if you're involved in Nicham Avelim, so it's only a Dender Rabbanim. And to get into whole discussions about how does that pater from Mitzvah Daraisa, for example. So I find that difficult, because it sounds like the Rambam saying that you're only being Mekayim Medin Rabbanim, you're being Mekayim Medin Min HaTorah of Yahav Terech Kamocha. It's that Chazal, for whatever reason, which is a question of itself, had to specify these categories and had to formulate the rules in more detail. But it would seem pretty straightforward that the Kiyum in and of itself is a Kiyum on a level Min HaTorah. You're doing a mitzvah that Chazal ordained, I mean, the Chazal formulated to fulfill the Torah's directive, which we saw at the beginning may apply to Lot and Baba Basra, but certainly should be the case here as well. Hi.
I don't understand how these two ideas in the Rambam are controversial. Like,
which part? The need to create
that you know that there's a Daraisa aspect of the Yahavler and Chazal define the specifics. Like, isn't that true by like tons of mitzvahs?
Yeah, but the question is, the first part is easier than the second part. Saying that to say that they needed to help us understand what that involves, the point is you could have said, okay, so I understand, so therefore I should visit the sick and I should comfort the mourners and I should take care of the needy, because that's all we have the kamocha. So why did Chazal have to come? They came just to name things, they came just to, they're really creating new rules, so it's a little bit different than other mitzvahs where there are actual specifics that wouldn't have necessarily been there at all without Chazal coming in ordaining. Presumably, even though once you get into the Pratim, you see there really are a lot of details that maybe really do require a whole structure, although where they come from in each case is its own discussion. But that's a whole part of the analysis, whether it would have been understood in of itself from the core of Yahav Telerecha Kamocha. But the notion that you're only fulfilling a mitzvah midrabanan when you're doing these things, that's what I find a little harder to understand. I think that would seem to really be your fulfilling it. Somebody who's engaged in any act of chesed is osek mitzvah daraisa, I would think, and it just happens to be that Chazal are involved in spelling out what that entails specifically.
Where does he say that these all fall under Yahav Telerecha Kamocha?
Hilchos Eva and Perek Yudalet. So, the other big question that many Sfarim talk about is that there seems to be two sources, at least, without even counting multiple iterations of the same source, but the two separate categories of sources for the same mitzvah, for the mitzvah of chesed. And the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos brings them both separately. So we've seen that there is a mitzvah of v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, and that means chesed. And there's a mitzvah of v'alachta b'drachav, and that means chesed. So the Rambam brings both of those in Sefer HaMitzvos, prompting the question of... prompting the question of why do we need two mitzvos to do the same thing. So this is discussed in a number of the Achronim. And the most common approach is that the mitzvos, they have essentially very common or overlapping actions, but they're for a different purpose. And we shall see, and especially within Hilchos Tzedakah, it will be evident that they address different goals. And that v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, even though the language sounds like it's emotionally based language, but it seems that practically v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha is about service. It's about being there for people in need. And to the extent that people are in need, so then there is a mitzvah. While v'halachta b'drachav is about forming a divine personality, is about creating yourself in the image of God. Now, practically speaking, the path to both goals is usually the same or overlapping. That helping your friend and creating a divine personality both involve your engaging in acts of chesed and tzedakah. But because they are for different purposes, they deserve to be acknowledged each in its own context. And as we will see, and this is part of our introductory framework to keep in mind, that there will be different emphases that play out in different contexts, especially in Hilchos Tzedakah. So keep that in mind as we see some of the details over the next few days, that some of the dinim in Hilchos Tzedakah are driven more by addressing the needs of humanity in that sense, service specifically, and some of them are more about creating a divine personality. Very, very roughly, because a lot of exceptions to this, say that the sukkahs in Bava Basra, which come in the context of what we've been talking about till now, are about tzibur and interacting kinds of issues. So they are largely, I would argue, you know, very, very broadly and generally, that these sugyas are more about the v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha component of the tzedakah. While the sugyas in Ksuvos are a little bit more directed to the personal development component of tzedakah. But there's huge overlaps within them and exceptions, and that's a very, very broad generalization. But I think there are some indications of that we'll see. But this concept overall, so this plays out in a lot of interesting ways. And just one interesting illustration of this. So to go back to Avraham Avinu and how he, at least as far as what's presented to us, it wasn't really necessarily only about one moment, but what's presented to us in the beginning of the Parshas Vayera, that moment that he won the role as the ancestor of God's nation. So there, the Gemara in Bava Metzia tells the background, fills in the spaces in the story of what's happening. that, first of all, is an additional chesed before the Hachnasas Orchim. The Gemara tells us that Avram was recuperating from the end of Lech Lecha. He had a bris milah in the end of Lech Lecha at an advanced age. So in Vayera, he was recuperating, so he was sick. So the name of the parsha is Vayera. That is actually an example of a different chesed and another example of a halachta bedrachav, because the Gemara tells us, and Rashi quotes it over there in the beginning of Vayera. Vayera means God appeared. Why did he appear? Levakir esachola. That was an act of bikur cholam that God was modeling. And this is another example of what we've seen, that halachta bedrachav, God models chesed, and therefore he taught us about bikur cholam. It's a very interesting comment of the Chidah over there, where he notes various halachos of bikur cholam that can be derived from the psukim in the very beginning of Vayera. So tangential. But in any event, so Avram, as a chola, is being visited by God, and God says to him, what do you need? Because that's one of the key goals of bikur cholam, to try to help the chola and see how you can be of service to him. So my father, Zichron Levracha, had a signature practice. He would always find out in advance what flavor ice cream the person liked, to try to bring them ice cream to cheer them up. So Avram didn't want ice cream. What did Avram want? Even though it was a very hot day, which was the point. That the Gemara says that God Davka made it hot. He took the sun out of its container, so to speak, so that it would be maximally unpleasant outside. But still Avram didn't want ice cream. Why? Because what he was concerned about was the whole purpose of the sun being so hot was to give Avram a break. Then he shouldn't have guests that were traveling outside. And yet, that was making him miserable. He said, I'm very uncomfortable here and not being engaged in Hachnasas Orchim. I need guests. So, okay, like a good Mevar Kachola, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides. And right afterwards, the guests show up. And that's where the Gemara and Shabbos derives from there. That because Avram interrupts that interaction to take care of the guests, so the Gemara tells us, Gedol Hachnasas Orchim Yoser Mehakbal Shpnei Shechina, that he's even willing to interrupt this meeting with God in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim. And there was a famous discussion that the Nodav Yehuda had with Shpitnikov Rebbe, I think, who asked him, so we can derive that from Avram Avinu. How did Avram know it? It's pretty bold to just decide to tell God. According to the Gemara in Shavuos, that's how you read the Psukim. That Avram says to God, just wait here, I've got to take care of those people. So that's pretty bold. I said, well, we tell Avram that he could do that. So some suggest, like Rav Shach wrote, that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. So, Balachta Bedrachav, that God's in the middle of doing chesed for him. So Avram says, now I got the message, I'm going to go do chesed right now. It's no greater covet to God than that he should engage in chesed at that moment. Others understand that was the whole point. God was sending in the guests and his requests, and presumably he was supposed to take care of them. But if you think about it, there's a big, big question on this whole episode. If this is the goal, right? If this is what the Gemara is telling us, that Avram is looking for people to take care of, and boom, these people show up. It's a big kasha here. What's the big question? Figure out what the big issue is. Imagine as follows. Imagine you are a wealthy businessman who wants to engage in stucco, but you don't have time because you're the businessman. You don't want to do the stucco because you're wealthy. So you ask your assistant to find you a very needy person so that you can fulfill your desire to be charitable. And he brings you somebody who looks totally miserable, and bedraggled, and pathetic. And you give him your tzedakah. And then you notice out the window that he changes his clothes and he drives off in a fancy car. And it turns out this guy was actually just an actor who your assistant hired to make you feel good that you were helping him out, but he didn't really need the money at all. And he just drove off with all your money. How quickly do you fire your assistant?
So since they were angels, was he really being, was he really doing the class of Sorfin?
Yeah, they didn't need any food. They weren't human. Were they any different than actors? Big question, right?
So he attempted to do it, so why is it?
Sorry?
It's not as good because he didn't do it, but he attempted to do it.
Okay, but that what he wanted, let's say if you were this guy, rich man, asking to give stuff to somebody, and somebody fooled you by bringing over an actor instead, and you spent the money, right? Avram spent the time. Time is money, right? So it's not like it comes back to him. He doesn't get a refund. So how would you feel if an actor drove off with all the money that you had set aside for something? So this is a big question, I think, and a number of Svarim talk about it. Some of the Svarim, one of the common elements in the Tells tradition, a lot of the Svarim that came out of Tells focused on this issue specifically. But one approach that you see a lot of the Svarim say is that there's two different dinim in Chesed and Tzedakah. There is V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. So that's about helping people. And if there's nobody in need, there's nobody on the streets because it's too hot today, it's okay. V'ahavta l'recha kamocha means you can sleep in. But there's still v'halachta b'dracha. You still need to keep working on your sense of giving. So for Avraham Avinu to miss a workout, so to speak, that was what was bugging him. So he said, all right, so there's nobody who needs to be taken care of, fine, but I can't let my chesed muscle atrophy. I still need to practice. I still need a workout partner. So Kadosh Baruch said, okay, so here's three sparring partners to work with you so that you can continue developing this midah of chesed, which is consistent with the whole idea, especially if Avram discovered God through Valachta Bedracha, through seeing how the chesed plays out. So that was his point. He was saying he needs to be able to keep working on this chesed, so he needs this opportunity. So this is a constant balance, as we'll see, because most of the time it overlaps. Most of the acts of chesed or tzedakah that we do, we are comfortably pursuing both goals. We are pursuing V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, and we are pursuing V'halachta b'drachav. But you have to be careful, because the goals could be at odds with each other, or they could be out of balance. There's a story they tell about a Chassidish Rabbi who was sick, and one of his Chassidim was calling him up and saying, Rabbi, I want to come visit. And the rabbi says, it's not a good time. And the chassid said, no, I really want to come. I want to come visit you. And the rabbi saying, it's not a good time. It's okay. You don't have to come. And the chassid said, no, I really, really want to come. And the rabbi said, look, it's 2:00 in the morning. And I'm sick. I don't want you to come visit me now. And the chassid said, but rabbi, I want to fulfill the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. And the rabbi responded, I'm not a lulav. It's not that kind of a mitzvah. You just say, like, okay, you know, I'm a lulav, and I'm just thinking about the myself, and I'm not thinking about the lulav. The whole gather hamitzvah requires you to be paying attention to, are you accomplishing anything here? So if you want to visit someone and the person says, I'm not interested in you coming, so there's no bigger hole in there. So it's possible that one can lose sight of half of their goals here by overemphasizing one side or the other. So that's something to think about. And when we see Hilchos Tzedakah, you'll see that there is a constant push and pull between the two goals, or we have to make sure that certainly we're not sacrificing one goal for the other, or we're not creating an imbalance, but certainly not trade one goal for the other. So just to give two examples, both of which we'll flesh out a little bit more, but to give two examples for now, so when you're giving out tzedakah, what's the best way to do it? So should you concentrate your gift and give it all in one gift where it's going to have a big impact? Or should you spread it out into smaller gifts?
That's the Rambam.
So the Rambam is one of the players here. So what does the Rambam say?
Give out a lot of lots smaller gifts because it'll encourage you to be a more giving person.
Okay, so there's basically three positions you could take here at least. But one position is, there were some who said that concentration is a good idea, like Rabbi Yaakov Emden, Maral, and others. But the more well-known position is that you should give smaller gifts. And within the smaller gift school, there are two ways to say that. So one is the Bach in Hochus Purim, almost a little timely, in Hochus Matanis Levionim, and the other is the Rambam that you just mentioned. So just to say it the other way around, the Bach in Hochus Matanis Levionim. The Bach says that it seems to him pretty obvious that if you could give a big gift to one ani, or a smaller gift to each of many aniyim, it makes sense to give it to a second one, to give smaller gifts to more aniyim. It says, because in doing so, you will be mechaye, you will sustain many more poor people. So essentially, he's coming from a economic theory perspective. His economic theory, which is supported by Gemara and Ervin, and we'll get into this in more detail, is that the world is better off like that, that you're going to do a more effective step towards helping poverty if you give out smaller gifts to more people rather than just helping out one person to a degree that is equal to all of that. So that would seem to line up with a V'yahav t'l'reicha kamocha kind of goal. That you're trying to help people. So how do you help people most effectively? That's how you help people most effectively. Hi.
Would the Bach, it would seem though, like from that perspective, that there would be an amount where the Bach would say, like, then it's irrelevant. Like, if
yes,
he had $5.
Correct. So I would imagine it would seem to be mistaber that if it's so diluted to the point that you're not helping anyone, so everyone's getting too little, so then that wouldn't make sense. So you have to imagine that we're talking about an amount that's smaller but significant enough that you are helping each one of these people. So you could help everyone. We won't phrase it as give, because maybe giving doesn't always equal helping. But let's say you could help more people to a smaller degree, or you could help only one person to a bigger degree. So the Bach would say, you could emphasize on the word help, meaning you should actually help. The Bach would say, better to help more people at a lesser degree than one person to a higher degree.
How does the Bach word it?
Something like, it's Pashut, Shabazah, Hechia, Yoser, Anim, or Kamanim, maybe Mayanim, I forgot exactly what word it is. I'll give it to you to look at tomorrow. So the Rambam also says to divide the wealth. But as Zach correctly noted, he comes at it from a different focus. So the Rambam here is in his commentary to Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos has a statement, Hakol lefi rov ha-maaseh, that everything is according to the multitude of the actions. So the Rambam is explaining why the language there is multitude as opposed to magnitude. Why doesn't it say Hakol lefi godo ha-maaseh? So in that context, the Rambam says it's a good advice for life overall, because it's true about everything, but this is just one example. He's saying this, the Mishnah is saying it in a broad whole life context, that life is not about having one big splash and then going back to sleep, but better to have many smaller accomplishments throughout life. That's how the Rambam explains that lefi rov hamasa, not lefi godol hamasa. So in that context, he then gives an example. He says, when you're giving staka, so better you should give the same amount through many acts of nesina rather than one big act that would only require you to give once. And he explains there that every action that you do of giving, every time you have to reach into your pocket, every time you have to write a check, even if it all adds up to the same amount anyway, but even if you are going to come to the same amount, but every act that you do strengthens your midah of generosity. And therefore, it's kedai to do it that way. It's kedai to make it into many gifts. So this is more of a focus on a v'halachta b'drachav goal. So here, the Bach and the Rambam saying similar things, but I think addressing two different aspects of tzedaka as a chesed example. The v'halachta b'drachav kamocha component is dominant in the Bach's approach, and the Rambam's approach, the v'halachta b'drachav component, is dominant. Now let's assume also, like we said within the Bach, that the Rambam is presumably also not interested in diluting it to the point of meaningless. So let's assume that, first of all, he wouldn't recommend, you know, torturing an ani who says he needs $100 desperately. So you say, okay, I'm going to give you a dollar a time. Come to me every hour on the hour for the next 4 days. And I think he's not going to advise you to do this in a way that's detrimental to the ani. But assuming that this is something that can be reconciled with the best needs and the emotional well-being of the recipient, so then this is the way he would advise doing it. Now, here's something particularly nogea to the sugyas that we're about to see, and in general, the whole goal of keeping these in balance. So what would you say would be a difference between whether you're taking a Bachian approach to spreading the wealth or a Maimonidean approach to spreading the wealth? A couple nafkaminas right off the bat. Yeah?
Does it have to be you who gives out the money, or can it be somebody else?
Okay, I was thinking something about that, but say it a little bit better.
As in...
Well, but you're actually, I think you're focusing on something other than what I'm thinking of. It's also good.
Go and give to 100 people,
and
you just say, here's money, do whatever. That's only one action.
Okay, so that's close to what Zach's saying. So it's actually the other half of what I was looking for, but you're right also on that. One thing is, because it's actually particularly relevant, Bezman Hazeh. So nowadays we have organizations or websites, let's say, that will disperse your money, and you could do it with a minimal effort and attention. So what does that do to the Rambam's view? While the Bach might be very happy with that, you could find ways to maximize the efficacy of your donation while also maybe dafka together minimizing the amount of time and attention you spend on it. So there could be a direct trade-off there. But also specifically for our sugyas, there can be other half of that. So what if it's not your money, right? So let's say you are the gabbai tzedakah, which is what's going to come up earliest actually in our gemaras here. So if you are the gabbai tzedakah, so then presumably the Bach, his logic still applies because it's all about doing things in the most efficient way. And one of the things that we'll discuss is the role of discretion. So discretion happens to be something which is relevant to tzedakah for everybody. Meaning that, and this is also one of the unique balances that's stuck, and we'll talk about this more tomorrow because we're about to run out of time. So basically what you're seeing here, if we break this down well enough, I'll try to let you guys get to mincha, but basically today, hopefully, in the next few minutes, we'll finish up introduction to chesed as a whole and how tzedakah fits in with that. So tomorrow, we'll get more into the specific tzedakah-related sources and how tzedakah, an introduction to tzedakah specifically. But here, this point, so if you are a gabbai tzedakah, so you have discretion, and if you are a donor, you have more discretion. However, as we'll see also, it's discretion within certain rules. It's an unusual combination, perhaps somewhat unique, not totally, but somewhat unusual as far as mitzvahs are concerned, as a mixture of rules and discretion. And that's something we'll talk about. So the donor has more discretion. The gabbai tzedakah has certain responsibilities where he really has to follow within a certain framework. In some very interesting ways, which we'll discuss, the gabbai tzedakah has exact opposite rules of the donor. And that's a particularly fascinating point. We'll get to that. But there's some discretion for both of them. So here, the Bach's consideration, how do you help the world the most? So that's discretion that's relevant to the Gabbai's stock also. You should decide, okay, how can I use the money that was entrusted to me in the most efficient way? While the Rambam's concern, it would not seem to be relevant to the Gabbai Tzedakah. That to make a decision in the question of how will I improve my spirituality the most, it doesn't seem like that is the job of the Gabbai Tzedakah. That is the role of the donor to make that decision to benefit his own spirituality. But the Gabbai Tzedakah is entrusted on behalf of others. It would seem more the Bach's factor is relevant. Rambam's factor, perhaps, less so. Also, the Rambam's logic would apply whether you're dealing with giving it to one ani or to many aniyim. Although, again, with the caveat, like we said, presumably you'd have to have a reason why you're not torturing the ani by making him receive it in separate increments, which is an additional challenge. While the Bach is specifically talking about giving it to different people, which the Rambam is not necessarily talking about. Just mention one other point about the Gabbai Tzedakah and this consideration of Yaakov Kamenetsky and his Haaretz in the Shulchan Aruch. So he notes also that there's an additional component for the Gabbai Tzedakah, because the Gabbai Tzedakah also has an achrayus to give out tzedakah in a way that is transparent and will convince people to give more. So if people think it's very lopsided, even if there's a justification for it, but it's perceived as lopsided, so then they're going to give less. And that becomes a problem for the Gabbai Tzedakah, that if he's not encouraging as much tzedakah as he could be because of the way he's giving it out, that's also something to think about. So these are, we'll stop there because we're up out of time, but these are some of the factors that go into the broad rubric of chesed, and tzedakah is very much an expression of this. So Bez Hashem will do tomorrow, look at the specific sources they gave, we'll give you a little bit more, but so the introduction part two will segue from this point into really applying it specifically to Hilchos Tzedakah and how tzedakah has these components and more to it, and the internal rules of tzedakah. So we'll see especially a careful attention to the language of the psukim in Parshas Re'eh, and what exactly is the message of the psukim in Parshas Re'eh will be very important for us to appreciate what the general mitzvah of tzedakah is. So that's our immediate goal for tomorrow, and a lot of very exciting and wonderful things ahead. Looking very forward. How does the